Hello, and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined today by Kate Booth and Alicia Baylog.
Nailed it!
Company members over at Locked Into Vacancy Entertainment. That altogether is live, is what it's colloquially referred to.
It is an acronym for live. Yes, cool. Correct.
Very nice.
Nice.
Yeah, and we have you guys on to talk about a couple different things. I know you guys have an event coming up pretty soon. You guys just had a show too, right?
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah, our last show was last week Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Usually we record once every other month live in front of an audience, hence the acronym for the name.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes us about 6 weeks to turn those three recordings into podcasts.
Mm.
Yes.
But the event coming up is our second annual Fool's Ball, which
on April 1st, thus the Fool.
Yes.
Which is our company's main fundraiser.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. We were worried, as always, we have cats with us. We were wondering how long it's going to take for us to have to wrangle them. And there was an errant
I think that was meow. Kid. I think that was a kid outside.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it really?
It was a very cat-like kid.
Yeah.
Nice. Cat man.
Well, that's interesting. We were actually just talking about kind of like podcast recording because it's kind of obviously... This is a podcast. But, like, it's funny the idea of, like, how difficult leveling must be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool that even, like, at the level of, like, the director and the performers, like, the company members, like, that's something that's probably very apparent is, like, managing mics and stuff like that. And you were saying, how many mics do you guys use on the show?
Eight.
Yeah, eight total. Five for the speaking parts, two for Foley.
Yeah.
And then one for the piano.
Yep.
And so let's talk a little bit too more about the format of the show. So it's obviously there is a live element to it.
Mm-hmm.
How much of an audience do you guys normally like?
I think that house seats.
It's 30? Close to
60.
It's close to 60.
I think it's 60.
It might even be over. Our most recent performance space that we've been at as a home for about the past 2 years is the Cabaret Room at Stage 773.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever that space seats. And usually I'd say our audiences are anywhere from halfway to all the way full.
Yeah.
We've definitely sold out in the past, but it's not every night a sellout show.
Yeah, the show.
Sunday night, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, right. The show I went to... I went to the 2015 Christmas show, and it was, I think that was sold out.
Yeah, the holiday show is usually a pretty popular one.
And
it
was
a big one.
So much damn fun.
Well, yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting because once you get past kind of like 20 or 30, I think that like it starts having a really different
totally
tone
like
tension.
Absolutely.
Or, you know what I mean? And that's super interesting. And then, so then you have that kind of translate over to... a recording.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you had asked me earlier about improvisation in versus scripted and how much of our humor and our jokes is on the spot. And we really operate off of scripts completely, but when you add in that house, I mean, we're a group of improvisers from Chicago, so we definitely go off a little bit more. The bigger the house is, the looser everybody is. You know, the audience has had some drinks at 773.
Yeah.
They're in a good mood.
And
the
I
performers.
Know,
yeah.
And I know when marketing ourselves, like, we talk about what's our point of difference versus a lot of other podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And that big one is the fact that we have an audience. And the audience in itself is almost its own character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We have a cheer sign to prompt them, a boo sign to also prompt that. And start introducing Goofy a sing-along in one serial.
And
Zoltek.
Full time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you actually started in the cast because you attended our shows.
I did.
And you have an amazing laugh.
Yeah, I went to the second holiday show ever.
Yeah.
And because a friend of mine from high school was in it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll go to this. And my laugh was in it.
If you listen to like our first couple of episodes, like maybe our first like six or eight, you can hear Alicia Baylog's laughter and you will know it. It will be quite explicit as to what laughter it is.
It's pretty distinct.
Yeah.
So you guys talked about before I get into that. So talk to us a little bit about just Locked Into Vacancy as a company of actors. Like,
yeah,
like Tell us about it. Nailed it.
We like long walks on the beach and hot cocoa.
Good.
I mean, but like, seriously.
With marshmallows or no marshmallows?
Oh, absolutely marshmallows.
Okay.
Hardcore cool. marshmallows.
Good,
yeah.
Good, good, good.
Vegan friendly marshmallows, of course.
Those are weird, though.
They're bad.
I haven't had any yet.
They're weird.
Wait, what kind of marshmallows?
Vegan friendly.
Vegan marshmallows. They're a little weird.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't even know how to go.
No, don't worry about that. That's okay. Right. You were going to say something.
Brush it off.
I was kidding.
Seriously,
The actual answer to that question would be that as a company, one, we do write, direct, and, I mean, we do all of it. There's write the songs and the scripts. And
everything is in-house in
Everything's
company.
In-house. So we have writing meetings where we get together and brainstorm, do exercises, and work out scripts. Sometimes people come in with whole scripts. Sometimes people come in with just an idea.
And we currently have 9 different serials that are being written, and they're all fiction. A lot of them are based on, like, ideas in popular culture.
Most of them are parodies of some kind.
That we expand on and parody the crap out of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the format's really interesting, too, because it kind of plays a lot on the ideas of early radio. Right.
Yes. Very much so.
And that's something I think, well, and that was kind of where I was going with the podcast talking about it earlier, was that we were just talking about how our parents can't figure it out. But it's so funny because, like, the formats that, like,
they
podcasts.
Would love it.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Where it's like the whole point is.
Yeah.
Like,
I was talking about how my mom hasn't quite figured out what platform to listen to my this podcast on.
Mm-hmm.
She would, if she could figure out podcasts, though, she would love your podcast because, like,
totally.
All about, like, the 1940s, because it's, like, a 1940s radio play, pretty much.
Yeah,
that format-wise, definitely.
Yeah.
We have a couple sketches that are 40s-esque, but for the most part, the sketches themselves aren't. But
Yeah, I mean, we've got, now we have one inspired by the Scooby-Doo cartoons of the 70s.
Yes.
Which is called The Groovy Mystery Gang Show. Because it's totally not Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Jorkles and whatnot.
Yeah.
Jorkles?
Jorkles.
That's her, like, catchphrase, you know, instead of, like, and he says Zork, I think.
Zork, yeah.
Instead of Zoink. There are some real intense differences that are.
It sounds like
it's clearly not Scooby-Doo.
But, like, enough of a hit hard enough to where you go, like, this is supposed to be something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and we play off on all the themes of that kind of stuff. So. Yeah.
And then it parodies other pop culture references within this one pop culture reference that it's this big mashed together monstrosity sometimes.
Yeah.
Hilariously so.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we've done a Jurassic Park episode. And
Jurassic Playland.
That's
Playland.
One of my faves. That's a really good one.
There's the go-kart one.
I think that was the show that I wasn't around for. But I'm sure it was hilarious.
As all of our content is.
We had the choose your own mystery episode as well.
That was one that I directed. That was a beast.
The summer, spring. It was literally we had the audience members choose how it ends.
Do you remember those books where it's like, if you want to go down the tunnel, turn page 34.
Yeah.
If you want to go to the haunted house. We did that. We had the audience vote live, and it was
cool.
Like, if you want to see the Carnival of Terror, raise your paddle. If you want to see the blah, 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 raise your paddle. And then we did, like, we had to rehearse everything in preparation. There were 3 choices that the audience made throughout. So there were, like, all together it was like 15 or 16 different shows that they could have seen. And then we did the one track that night that they picked.
Oh
well, okay,
God.
So I'm interested in, and that was, you said that was something that you directed, that one?
Yeah.
So when you're thinking about something that has to A, live in a theatrical tradition and be a live show, but also B, live in this like really nebulous podcasting world that we're kind of all figuring out still.
Totally.
What are some of the unique challenges as a director? Because I'm sure that like there's like playing the visual versus auditory? Yeah, there it is.
That's the one?
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you hit the crux of it. That's the hardest thing to do. I think, especially for me, who I come from a very physical theater background, it's kind of ironic. My two backgrounds are in text and Shakespeare and verse and poetry and physical theater. Like, that's my background. So the shows with live are really great because they play mostly on my text and verse and auditory side of acting and reaching the audience. It is tricky because we've got the live show, the live audience there, and we want them to enjoy their night. We want them to feel like they're seeing something special by seeing a live recording. That's mm-hmm. cool and fun, and you don't get to do that really very often these days. It's not like the Ed Sullivan show still taping down right. the street, you know? Which is exactly the feel we want to capture with them. But we also can't exclude our listening audience mm-hmm. because the whole reason the posterity of the podcast is specifically for them.
Right.
And I don't know. I think it's just a balance. Like, every once in a while, we talk as a company and we're like, okay, we got to pull back on the visual gags.
Yes.
And then it kind of ebbs and flows, and we sort of get to a point where, like, maybe we can insert one or two more again. Yeah. You know, like, liven up the live performance a little bit more.
Well, that's interesting, right? Because, like, you want to have incentive for people to come in person, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then, so, those are the challenges as a director, but then, like, how have you guys as performers found that balance? Like, has it been, like, rewarding, kind of, like, not having to entirely rely on physicality, or has that, like, been stifling?
I love it, personally. I think it's really fun. It's a great challenge as a performer, and you will see, when you come to a live taping of our show, or recording, I should say, you will see there are a lot of us that use physicality to get character voices out.
Absolutely. That's the easiest way to get a weird voice.
It's sometimes. The easiest way. you embody it entirely.
Yeah. I mean, that's even... I think... I always think the thing that makes our live audience members laugh the most is the... pun intended, I guess, is the actual weird faces, the mugging, as I like to call it, because some of our cast members make really weird faces.
Really weird faces.
Which provide lots of excellent Facebook fodder for the next, for our promoting ourselves later. Mm-hmm.
But, like, stuff that you would never really want to go see in a realistic play context. Mm-hmm. You know, it's more clowny than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Physically.
It wouldn't be amusing in an actual play.
No.
It would seem just way too ridiculous.
Way too muggy. But when you're listening, that's all the audience has to connect to the character is what they sound like.
Yeah. I have an interesting question. So what we've been kind of realizing this week is we're kind of stepping out. Obviously, the first couple weeks of episodes were really classical music heavy, but we're kind of doing a few different things. We had the Chicago Actors Call to Action on Monday, Lee Wichman. Cool. Then on Tuesday, we had
a graphic designer.
We talked about graphic design. Very and so cool. As we're kind of doing that and exploring, like, interviewing people outside of the field of that we're most comfortable with, we're trying to, like, find different ways to, like, really make that work and mm-hmm. not have it to have it be interesting for our listenership, but also for the people that are being interviewed. And so there's something I actually want to try, and I'm interested in taking your guys's backgrounds and basically and, like, what how you've gotten to this point of this kind of, like, for I don't want to suggest your ages or anything, but, like, 20s 30s formative kind of, like, looking to, I don't mean to say, like, start a career, but do you know what I mean? Like, the socially contrived sense of, like, and so I guess my question here is, like, what is, like, the goal that most people that have similar backgrounds to you are striving towards, mm-hmm. if that makes sense? Like, the mm-hmm. thing that when you were in college, everyone was like, this is the thing that you're going to do. And I think with opera singers, it's this young artist program track of, like...
Like, you know, you'll go to a progressively more impressive young artist program until you get an agent, and then you'll, you know, sing in regional houses to progressively more impressive regional houses until you're singing at the Met.
Yeah.
Or Europe.
Right.
And that's this very, like...
That's the
type
track.
A That's the track. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then my B question is, has what you've done personally kind of reflected that or derived away from it?
Do you want to go first?
Heavy stuff.
I know it's a very heavy question.
That's a heavy question.
It's just a long question.
Yeah, I know.
But I can, I mean, I
you
can
should go
take...
first.
Okay, all right. So I feel as though Chicago theater, because I feel like theater in general, I'll start with that, has a very different type A track depending on where you want to go, right? Mm-hmm. Like Hollywood, there's a type A track. New York, there's a type A track. And then Chicago is another track that's different, right? So for me, I always knew I wanted to go to Chicago. My goal was to do theater on the stage. physical theater and verse theater, as I've previously stated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of classical Shakespeare. I love taking it into new contexts and locations and times and all that jazz. And that, Moody agrees.
Did that pick up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, everyone, there was no question of like, what was that that they're reacting to? There was just like a really cute... really clear. Anyway, sorry.
No, it's okay. And the background that I came from, I graduated from Northern Illinois University, which is in the cornfields of DeKalb, Illinois. And
my grandma lives out there.
It's a lovely little country if you want a nice quiet life.
Yeah.
And my theater department definitely was small in the sense that it was really intimate and I got great training, but because it was in the cornfields of Illinois, I left with not amazing connections. So like, there definitely is an equivalent in the theater world of the young artist program that you're talking about. And it's internships with bigger theater companies.
Ideally, like, I know like Milwaukee Rep is one of those.
Milwaukee Rep. Totally.
And then like Walnut
Chicago
Street.
Shakespeare.
Then there's like one in Cincinnati.
You're going to find a lot of those types of programs in summer stock theater for sure, which is along the Shakespeare kind of stuff that I talked about. Classical plays, Noel Coward, really big stuff that will always be produced because people consider them to be classics and the current theater attending audience will still pay to come to see them. And they want to see them.
That also sounds
that
very familiar.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of operas that will kind of go into rotation like that.
Yeah.
Easy to latch on to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We know that we will have subscribers come to that show.
Right.
And so that was the track. And then I ended up doing something entirely different.
Mm.
That was the goal. That was what I thought. I was like, if I don't have, like, if I'm not working with at least one show with Chicago Shakespeare 3 years after I graduate, then I'm going to go back to grad school or think about what else I want to do instead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been over 3 years since I graduated, and I've not done that. I've not yet worked with Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Here's your chance, Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Yeah. Kate Booth, great actress. Highly recommend. Hope that's okay.
Which, and I mean, based on our last few episodes, I'm sure they're listening.
Just, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where we...
the one where we earned our explicit rating. Yeah.
But instead, I ended up getting heavily involved with circus theater, Renaissance fairs, and the stage combat world of Chicago. And that sort of took my path into a completely different direction. I feel as though I am... honestly, pretty successful as a 20-something white female actor in Chicago. There's a lot of me. And I feel like the fact that I'm producing work that I'm inspired by and I like to work on, I'm getting paid for the work that I do. Like, I feel successful.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm on a good track.
That's an interesting thing to hear because I do think that that seems to be a pattern in Chicago for in the different art fields is that you can kind of manage that. Like to maybe you're not living your most luxurious lifestyle, but you're definitely doing things that that are satisfying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A friend of mine has a way to talk about if a show's like, if it's worth taking or not. And it's, is it going to feed your wallet? Is it going to feed your resume? Or is it going to feed your soul?
Mm-hmm.
And those are like the three ways to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've definitely heard that before too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that question is weird for me because I'm kind of an oddball in this scenario. I'm kind of a theater person from the outside looking in.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm not a career theater person. I'm actually a graphic designer by trade. That is what I went to school to study for and what I am doing professionally.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a love of the arts, and I did a lot of theater. I did it in college. I did it in high school. And I kind of had actually not been doing it for a couple of years when I was living in Chicago because I was focusing on my career, but there's always something I love, and I enjoy storytelling. That's partly why I do brand design. There are stories to be told, and it is an itch I like to scratch, so I kind of definitely, I find it creatively enriching in the way that it's another way to look at storytelling.
Yeah.
And it keeps me... from getting burnt out, using my brain in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So then, as a theater professional with not a theater background, like how has that transition been? I guess not full transition because you're still a graphic designer.
Right.
But I mean, like, as now an
you
actor.
You are now an artist.
The transformation is complete. Yeah. So I guess I'm wondering, like, you know, is there a relatable track to what we're talking about within your field?
I mean, even just saying that my path didn't go the way I thought it was going to is, I think, true in pretty much any fields, especially the creative field. Because mm-hmm. I also didn't go to art school. I went to a liberal arts college. And I enjoyed the well-roundedness of that education. Versus being so focused. So I also left school not knowing entirely exactly what kind of design I was going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they train you for advertising because that's where the big bucks are. I actually work in packaging design, which is something I didn't think I would end up doing at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of fell into it and I loved it. It's very traditional design. Yeah.
There has to be something satisfying about literally being, like, putting a bow on it. Like, it is contained.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's great seeing things on the shelf in the grocery store.
Yeah.
Like, there's something really satisfying that. But what's crushing is when you see it in the Chicago River. Oh! It's garbage. But, you know, whatever.
what have you designed that's in the grocery store?
I did a lot of Pillsbury stuff for, like, 4 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
Dressed up the Pillsbury Doughboy in little overalls once. That was very satisfying. But yeah, I do, I mean, brands.
Like, yeah.
Cool. I've done Colgate and Tom's of Maine and, Dial Tone Body Wash. Like,
oh my God, I love that.
So I go into people's houses all the time and see my stuff in their pantry or on their bathroom sink. It's just a weird life thing that happens.
Yep.
Now I do stuff for, Aldi and, do stuff for Mariano's.
Nice.
Aldi seems like they're going through, like, a branding overhaul right now.
I saw that they changed their logo.
Oh, yes, they are. They did do their logo. I don't know who did that. My company's kind of big. And they have several agencies that work on them.
Yeah,
sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
No, I like Aldi.
They're good. Right?
I don't know, man. I have trust issues with companies for some reason.
with grocery store companies?
Yeah, man. Because, like, I don't know, you know, you don't know who's not getting paid well and, like, who's got a factory farm set up somewhere in Germany. Like, you don't know. I'm saying Germany because Aldi's from Germany, not because I have a thing against Germany.
The U.S. headquarters are in Batavia, Illinois.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so cool. I did not know that.
Yes.
Well, Batavia does kind of sound like Bavaria, so it's understandable, the confusion.
Easy confusion.
Also potentially a weird factory farm, maybe.
Batavia?
I don't know.
Just
anyway.
The entirety of Batavia?
Well, I will say of Aldi's credit that they do, like, no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives.
Yeah, and they're really big on organics. And it's interesting because they're Aldi's so limited in, I think they only can have, like, 150 items or something like that. Like, that's how they work.
A lot of their stuff, they're getting bigger now. Yeah. Actually, one of Aldi's main competitors in Europe is coming to the U.S.
No way!
That shopping style is blowing up.
That's super European.
Because
it's so
much more affordable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's really great for city dwellers because it's so, like, even when the way you interact with the people that work the registers is so,
It's a business.
Introvert friendly, I guess, is the way that I want to put it.
Uh-huh. I mean, and that's their German roots. Like,
right.
Yeah. Efficiency is key.
Exactly.
That's why they have, like, 5 barcodes on everything. Because if we can just throw it down the aisle and it scans,
that's great.
Every second you save is money.
That's
we
what
save.
It is. It's like every second that is like made as efficient as possible.
My only beef with Aldi is that they don't have tofu.
What's up with that?
They don't have tofu.
Not just straight tofu. They have tofu burgers.
Really?
They have, like, veggie burgers and stuff.
They do
like
have
that.
Some vegetarian stuff.
Yeah, they do. Like, their veggie burgers are good.
Yeah.
But, like,
the secret challenge of private, like, their private label. They don't have a lot of name brands.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
And so everything they source is reliant on what other companies are making.
Right.
That's true.
Because it's they don't manufacture their own food, really. Yeah. Other companies make it, and they buy it and put it in their package.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's how pretty much all grocery stores work.
With their name brand stuff.
Oh, I'm learning so much.
Well, okay. So
let's... And I totally derailed that.
No.
Fine.
Very pro derailing in this. because then I get to do a brilliant segue like this, like fighting. So yeah. Let's talk about it. Well, because you mentioned it, and we'd mentioned it before we started recording, and I was like, that'd be a really interesting conversation to have because, we definitely have a progressive bent on this show. Like, we care a lot about gender equality and gender relations, and I think that there's a really interesting thing
We keep referencing yesterday's episode and how fired up specifically I got about feminism, and then Kate brought up that there's an issue of safety in the fight community.
Red hot topic.
I was like, talk about it. So talk about it.
Well, hold on. I'd love to actually talk about like basics of fight concepts. I feel like they're pretty rich.
Basics of fight concepts are something that I have a very strong personal philosophy on.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I actually feel like the basics of fight concepts, there's a couple principles that I have taken from things that stage combat teachers have told me, and they are so applicable to like feeling satisfied with your life.
Yeah.
The first thing that I feel like is really, and I should, okay.
I like seeing how fired up
I get right so now. Passionate about it. I should start off by saying I am not a certified teacher or anything like that in the stage combat world. I am an active member of the Chicago Fight Theater community. I am a member with the Society of American Fight Directors. I'm an advanced actor combatant with them. So I have a couple of credentials that I'd be happy to tell you about. But please don't take everything that I say as gospel about stage combat, because it's an art form like anything else, and there are different opinions on it.
As you, like, errantly punch someone, be like, Kate Booth said it!
Do this! Yeah. But the first principle that I feel like is pretty core, like a keystone principle of stage combat, is the victim is always in control.
Mm-hmm.
And we use the word victim, although that's kind of fading out of popularity, but as in, if Maureen were to throw a stage slap at me, and we had it agreed that it was going to be a non-contact, so we're making a nap a sound in some way, shape, or form, I am the victim in this scenario, according to the storytelling, and so I am in control. If I feel like Maureen is getting too close to my face, my actual face, I get to say, hey, Maureen, can you take, like, another 4 inches back so that I feel a little bit safer? So that's the principle. Victim is always in control. Or, like, if we were doing a choke or something where there's a contact move, the victim always has the right to be like, hey, can we try it this way? Or, hey, how about we explore this option a little bit? And I feel like that is the most basic principle of communication. I feel like if I have a friend that I care a lot about, which is most of my friends, I'd like to think all of my friends.
Yeah.
And they feel hurt by something I've done or said or didn't do or didn't say, I feel like they are in control. Like, they have the right to say my feelings are hurt.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's just a principle that I feel like is so applicable to the world. Another thing that I've learned is go fast to go slow. When you're rehearsing in stage combat, you do everything in extremely slow motion. Like, you are moving through clay or molasses. Mm. Everything is slow and smooth. And the reason you go slow is so that you can go fast later on. So that, like, for performance time, if you were to slow a move down, you know exactly what your body is doing at every single moment of the move, right? And you rehearse that slowly so that when you need to go to speed, it's there and your body doesn't need to think about it. It's
muscle memory.
Muscle memory. So that's like two examples.
Yeah,
but
sure.
There's so many. And I feel like they're so applicable to society and to like your day-to-day interactions with people. I see it everywhere. And I wish everybody studied stage combat so that they could learn these things and also feel like a badass.
I had to take a couple stage combat classes for opera just because women in opera get beat up a lot.
They sure do.
Yeah. Shoop, shoop. The characters, not the women, hopefully. Anyway, I don't feel great about that.
Nope.
Anyway,
yep.
I'm going to move on. So, I've taken a couple stage combat classes,
yes.
And the thing that I know is the the hair
hair pull. Yeah.
That's a fun one.
It's a fun one. And you can turn it into like a nose grab or an ear grab if you're like doing a comedy.
Hair, like being dragged by the hair kind of thing.
Yeah. Totally. So what you do is you put, and podcast gold, you put your hand, is this right? Yeah. He puts his hand on my head.
Uh-huh.
I grab your hands and like hold your hand on my head.
Got it.
And then I have control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Victim has control.
And then if your character were to want to throw my head down on a table, what I would do is I would throw my head toward the table and smack my hands on the table to make the noise.
Alicia, can I touch you?
Of course.
Okay. Fun thing you can also do, again, podcast goal, if you guys can imagine this. If I'm going to pretend to pull Alicia's hair, which for those of you at home, Alicia has a gorgeous pixie cut. And so there's not a lot. It's hard.
Goals.
It's hard to sell a hair pull on Alicia. One of the things you can do is you can make your hand relaxed and loose, but look like a claw. And then you like...
It looks like a claw.
It looks like a claw. You set it on top of her head and you work your fingers around, but you're not actually grabbing anything, also feels very right? Nice. Yeah, it's like a little head massage for your partner. And you do that.
Well, that reminds me of the thing I have. Anyway, I have one of those, we'll take a picture of it.
Metal thingies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you just close your fingers and it looks as though I have her hair in my hand, but I don't. I don't have anything.
Yeah.
Right? It's super safe. So it's like this, you roll it around in there, and then you do exactly what you did, Maureen, where like she grabs onto my hands and now it looks like I'm really pulling her hair. Podcast gold, guys. Yeah. This is really good, I promise.
Yeah.
What we might do if Kate, you are up to it, is afterward we might do like film a small like tiny little demonstration of it
that.
And put it up on our Facebook.
I think
that would be fun.
You want to pull my hair, Maureen?
I do.
Okay, cool. Done.
Anyway, so well,
feminism.
So what happened? What happened? What was your? Did you want to do an extension of our QIO segment yesterday?
Current events.
Yeah. Well, because QIO. I don't know if you've.
I don't know what that.
So that is the show that Josh Smith. And does his recurring segment.
Okay.
And it stands for Questionable Internet Opinions. And basically what it is, like one of us, usually it's Josh, but yesterday it was Maureen, we'll talk about, in fact, the last couple.
Have been Maureen.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll go like, this is something that happened on Facebook, and usually it's because we're all, most of our friends are opera singers, so like,
we all see
it's
the
something
same
stuff. That, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And so we just talk about like something that happened in the Classical Singers Forum or something like that. That just was like, this is so sexist or this is so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So without going into any details or names, because I don't believe in that. And I know that the people who, at least one of the people who is involved, actually were kind of, would like this to not be blown up into a huge deal, and it already kind of became one.
Mm.
But basically, long story short, there is a theater company from the suburbs, and they do a lot of work with kids of many ages, as well as adult performers, right? And there was a weapon on stage, or they were talking about maybe having a weapon on stage, and it was going to be a trident, so an unconventional weapon, not just like a sword.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to unconventional weapons, it's always a matter of like a question of safety, you know, who's making this weapon? How sharp or not sharp will we make it? Just because you want to make sure that you prevent accidents from happening.
Of course.
So they were talking about it, and the actress brought the question to social media, to Facebook, and said, you know, we're thinking about having this trident on stage. I'm wondering, stage combat safety friends, like, what are your thoughts? So she posted kind of a random, you know, shout out to, she had a lot of friends who were involved in the Chicago theater fight community. And it was just like a quick, you know.
Like, what are the guidelines?
What are the guidelines?
Curiosity.
Out of curiosity, what do you think I need to be aware of to make sure that I do this in a safe way? Mm-hmm. And the whole Chicago theater community has been extremely sensitive for about the past year about questions of violence, anytime there's intimacy choreography, weapons, non-weapons. It's just, we're really keeping a sharp eye on it lately, which is great and really awesome. So this gal posted this question, and I believe another woman responded first and answered her question.
That scares me that you said first.
I know. As I'm talking about it, I'm starting to get, like, gross and, like, tense and... Ugh. But it snowballed a little bit, and then it snowballed a lot.
And it snowballed a lot, yeah.
And then it kept snowballing afterwards and became a fiasco. Well, we're very pro the
thought dudes are terrible on this show.
Yeah, sometimes they are, you know?
Yeah. What was the nature of the snowball?
So basically, another actress who I would say has quite a bit more experience than I personally do regarding stage combat and safety, and fight choreography and all that jazz, just said, you know, anytime there's a weapon on stage, it's got to be dulled and it needs to be pointed away from any actual performers or audience members. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much basic common knowledge. It's super easy to accomplish. That's like a guideline, right?
Yeah.
One of the company members responded and kind of made a joke about it. And the actress that answered the question commented back, well, no, this really isn't a joke. Like, this is safety. We don't joke about safety. And these are the guidelines.
Right.
And then from there, the snowball happened. And the snowball regarded the choreographer's feelings and said, oh, you're getting really offended about this. It was just a joke. Blah, like, you have so many feelings. And then there was a... Yeah, that was the word, guys. That
feelings.
Have a lot of feelings about, to be perfectly frank.
ridiculous.
And then, like, memes being posted in response to, like, belittle the conversation.
From such mature films of great renown as Mean Girls and having feelings.
You just have a lot of feelings.
Yeah, yeah. No. Yeah, it was just, it was, and that, and there was all this backlash against this choreographer who, you know, obviously, like, was really passionate about what she was talking about. And then the actress who originally posted the question was really concerned about the fact that it had become this whole huge thing because everyone in Chicago is kind of watching this right now. And social media is so visible. The Chicago theater community, much like what you're talking about with the opera community, is small. You know, it's tight. It's huge and it's also tiny. And everyone knows everyone. And
absolutely.
So it showed up on all of our feeds and everybody started chiming in. Even Alicia's.
Yeah. And she's a graphic designer.
Everybody started chiming in. And here's the happy ending, guys. Everybody started chiming in. I don't want to say in defense of or on the sides, but in support of the two actresses.
Good.
And men and women from the fight community and from other theater companies both responded to these two gentlemen who were from the theater, the one theater company that was doing the show, right? So there were these two guys who were from the theater company and they own the company and they were kind of like responding to all of this other stuff that people started posting, right? Comments and replies and threads. Because
then their ego is brought into it. And like, what's a man but a bag with an ego?
Absolutely an ego fight.
It was a huge ego fight.
And it's just like, dude, chill. Like, we get it. Like, you have enough time to like have an opinion on Facebook.
Like, and really, like, all it comes down to is you asked a question about safety, and because someone, for me, it feels like because someone said, yeah, you have to take the time and resources to take care of this, which they may or may not have as a small theater company, their response was like, well, I know how to take care of it. Well, I have the credentials. Do you want me to show you my credentials?
The word professionalism was thrown out.
Professionalism.
Which is, like, the second time in a month I've seen a fight like that in my Facebook feed.
It's really in vogue right now.
It is.
Calling people's professionalism into question.
On social media.
The other one I heard of, a theater company actually shut down.
Oh, yeah, that was the other one. Okay.
Good golly.
Yeah, it's been catching like wildfire lately.
Which I would air with a word of caution to the Chicago theater community. As a patron who loves seeing theater, please don't close them all down with infighting.
Yeah.
Please don't. Because it's like, storefront theater is already fighting a rent battle. They don't need an infighting battle either.
It's so true. And that's the saddest thing about it, is that...
Because I'm, again, all supportive, obviously. Well, safety, but it's like...
Of course. Well, it's this... we keep talking about the episode yesterday, but it's still in my mind. But it's similar to the idea of, like, this kind of like transphobic idea of like people who identify as women receiving pushback from women.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, dude, you're on the same team. Yeah, like, absolutely. Why would you fight with someone who is on your team?
Yeah.
Who wants the same rights, who wants the same treatment, who, like, why are you nitpicking over what name your parents gave you?
Yeah. I think there is a combination of fear in the arts community in general, because we are afraid of becoming a dying race, mm-hmm. as artists. Like, mm-hmm. that is a fear. We're afraid of extinction. And then there's also a combination, especially if you look at the up and coming generations of artists and the millennial generation of artists, mm-hmm. there's also that combination of a little bit of entitlement that we have,
mm-hmm.
because we've mm-hmm. all been told that our art is special and important, and the fact that we make it and it's just our art is special and unique and cool. So I think that when you combine those two things, it leads to a climate that's primed for conflict with amongst artists, which is so sad, and exactly like what you're saying, Maureen, like, not what any of us really want, you know. Yeah. We want to make art.
Yeah.
Yeah. The problem was we both looked like we had a question to ask, and I don't know if you have, but I've completely forgot the question I was going to ask.
I didn't have one.
No. Oh, you just nailed it again.
So engaging.
Nailed it. All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about live, if that's cool.
That's
like a pretty hard segue.
Yeah.
Pretty good at them. and by that, I mean terrible. well, I want to talk more about, how recurring are these segments? Have we listed out these, the ones that are on the post? I'm lifting up the postcard.
We have not listed all of them.
Yes.
So I've got the postcard for the show here. Mm-hmm. And these are the four shows. And
well, there's more than four.
There's nine total.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That we're currently producing.
The, like,
cool.
The, like, hits?
I think those are some of our biggest hits, and I think some of the longest running.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the one on the left, top left, we've got a guy drinking a martini.
Yeah.
He's got a hat, and there's a spaceship behind him, and it's Joe Jupiter.
Space Private Eye.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Rogers sisters. What is this based off of? The Andrews?
The Andrews sisters.
Yeah.
It's the Andrews sisters and Charlie's Angels.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Because they also fight crime.
They fight Nazis.
They fight Nazis.
Definitely Nazis.
Definitely Nazi crime.
There is
specifically Nazi crime. Cool.
I want to shout out Lyndon Crist, who does the Irving sisters. Uh-huh. Similar concept, but they do, basically, they actually put on concerts. Like, they did a friend of ours wedding. And she teaches at Roosevelt University, and she does recitals there too. And they just do I think they do private gigs and stuff, but they mm-hmm. are that kind of Andrews sisters tradition, as it were.
Cool.
And then on the bottom left, Chi Beta Justice.
Yes. Sorority girls with superpowers.
Cool.
Can you tell them some of the code names? Because the code names are so good.
Like the sisters?
Yeah.
What their names are?
Yeah.
Oh.
Like who's, like, the main character?
There's the pretty one.
Yeah.
And she's played by a dude.
Yep.
She's like 6 foot tall, Hulk-ish.
She's like an Amazon. Like, those are her superpowers. But she's gorgeous.
There's Legacy. She's a legacy of the sorority.
She's our protagonist.
And she has the power to get her way.
like unexplainedly so.
Like, she often doesn't get things, and then she's like, man, I could really use a sandwich. And it's like, boom!
Yeah.
On the most basic level. Yeah. There's
Hot Mess.
Yes, I play Hot Mess. And I have the power to be, like, real smart.
She's also a Kesha enthusiast.
Yeah.
Which aren't we all?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Deep down. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there is, this is hard.
Their sidekick.
Oh, there's Friend Zone.
Oh,
Friend Zone. He has the power of a car on campus.
Yep. You guys, it's so good.
That's good.
Yeah.
He has the power of a car on campus.
I have a question. Did you guys see, speaking of drag, the meme of the "This is the future liberals want"?
Oh my gosh!
Yes.
How good is that?
Yeah.
Right?
So good.
We actually know Emma Cox knows
the guy
who started the meme.
No, yeah. The guy in the meme. The
Even better.
Yeah. Well, because he, well, there's a couple, I've listened to a couple of progressive podcasts that have gotten out in contact, that have gotten in contact with him
mm-hmm.
to be like, what do you actually think about this? And he's like, well, obviously, when the photo first came out, there was a lot of negative backlash, but like the positive reinforcement of, for anyone that doesn't know, what ended up happening was a bunch of people just tweeted out like memes of like,
so of like the Power Rangers on the subway. Like, this is the future the liberals want. Or like,
well, I mean, so the original,
or like
image.
A guy in an elephant suit saluting a soldier, yeah. Just like, so, just like ridiculous abstract shit.
The original image was retweeted by some Republican asshole that, and it was a picture of a Muslim woman in hijab, and then a
like in a burqa, in a full burqa,
yeah. And then someone in drag,
yeah.
And they were like, and they were on a transit, and like a well-cleaned transit.
Yeah, it was a very nice train.
It looked, yeah. Was like, it CTA or was it New York?
I can't. It was definitely not the CTA.
Yeah. Okay.
It was too nice for that.
If it was, it was like the purple.
It was probably like something. Yeah. I mean, it was probably like Seattle's like public transit ish.
Yeah.
Where like not a lot of people ride it, so it's still real nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but
most of them bike.
Right.
But it's like, the whole premise of the joke thereafter was, yeah, this is the future liberals want, like people of different religions and different people getting along. Like,
my favorite reaction to it was clean public transit and kicky daytime drag look.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and this is the future. Yeah. Kicky daytime drag look is my.
Ooh, that's great.
Which I'm now adding kicky to my vocabulary.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Kicky's a good one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so wait, yeah, and then the fourth, Generic Hospital, which shout out my mom who has watched General Hospital for like 10 years and circling back to this whole thing of like, if only our parents could figure out how podcasts work.
Oh my God. It's like, so good though. I have to say, Generic Hospital.
I thought you were going to say General Hospital and I was about to tune you out.
I've seen a few episodes and I'm always impressed by how often people die and come back to life.
Absolutely.
It's like, how do you manage that? Like, as a writer.
One of the things we joke about.
And keep your self-esteem going.
Oh, it's so true. One of the things we joke about on Generic Hospital all the time is, like, coming back from a commercial break and how, like, things have completely changed, but they're still entirely the same.
Yeah.
And also, between episodes, we have no continuity on Generic
Absolutely
Hospital.
Absolutely not.
And it was one of the things we talked about at the very beginning when we started writing the serial. We were like, do we need to have continuity between, like, in the last episode, this character had amnesia. And we're like, oh, no, it's a hospital. They cured it somehow.
We even had a time where between amnesia and, like, evil twins with backwards names of each other, we kind of forgot what the original name of the character was. There was the Dakota Montana,
or
Montana
Dakota.
Dakota.
It did change, by the way.
It did.
I just want to, like, point that out. It did officially, the character's name officially changed on the podcast.
It did.
Over time. And is now something else because we got confused.
Like, but it's a soap opera.
It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
Everything changes.
Yeah.
And nothing ever changes.
But does it? Yeah.
So how long has Live been around?
About 3.5 years, I think.
Yeah, I'd say that's about
3.5.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And who started it?
So the idea came about when a young Shane Hill and his buddy and roommate and like domestic lifetime platonic partner, Andy Huddle, were talking. And they had been talking about doing something in the style of the golden age of radio for a really long time. And the intrigueness of it, the appeal to them, was intrigueness. Add that to your vocabulary.
Kicky and intrigueness.
Intrigueness. Perfect.
The thing that really drew them in was the idea of having Live Foley and telling these classic sounding stories, but about modern jokes. Like stuff that our audience can currently relate, but telling it in that old style way. And that was what the Live was kind of founded on. I attended their first ever show, which was in a church. The acoustics were terrible.
Or fantastic.
Or fantastic.
Those recordings
are
rough.
Depending on what you're into.
Yeah, yeah. And then
very boomy dialogue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And at the end of the show, I came up to them and I was like, you guys, this is the funniest stuff I've heard that's currently being written in Chicago. And I still feel that way about Live. I still feel like out of everything I've seen that's new, and there's a ton of devised work and improvised and comedy shows, mm-hmm. sketch shows in Chicago, I honestly think that Live is one of the funniest. Mm. I really do.
So how, is there like a guideline for how long a show runs? Is there like a popularity meter of some kind, or
you mean like how long do we produce a specific serial?
Sure, yeah, like
okay,
or
not really,
yeah. I don't think we've gotten to that point yet.
No,
because we've been making new ones that were staggered enough that I don't feel like we do too many of one serial in a row.
Gotcha. Yeah, like we started out with like 3 or 4 different serials,
and then some are harder to write than others. Like the Rogers Sisters, because it involves singing,
right?
We have to write songs, so like those have longer breaks in between episodes.
Yeah,
and how long are each of the episodes?
About 20 to 25 minutes. Yeah,
okay,
is the goal.
And then so runtime of show is like.
Runtime of a show is usually about 2 hours because there's 2 intermissions, one between each. So there's like serial 1, intermission, serial 2, intermission, serial 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then we set up the whole night as kind of a cabaret evening where we have a host every night that's different. And it's just one of our actors portraying a random character.
Mm-hmm.
Like for March Madness, which was our past show, we had a guy, Andy Huddle, who was like created the show with Shane, doing a sports casting announcing kind of character about March Madness. But it was all about the cereals. Like, we've got a great lineup for you tonight.
Yeah, though. All the way from Syracuse.
Yeah. And that was the host for
the night.
Good.
Nice. Yeah. The time I saw it, it was Mrs. Claus, but it was like sexy Mrs. Claus.
Oh, yeah. I like sexy Mrs. Claus.
She is really great. She's played by a gal named Margaret, who's awesome.
What?
I'm trying to whisper to you, do you have another question? Didn't work.
But I can't read lips.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've still got a few minutes. So I want to talk more specifically about the premise of the fundraiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what would you say people should be looking forward to?
Well, the 5 W's are that it's going to be happening, I know, right? Back to my journalistic roots in the school newspaper.
Oh, that's what your 5 W's are. I was like, there are 5 W's for foosball?
Who, what, where, when, why?
Yeah.
I was thinking specifically for foosball.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
Wikipedia.
I was like...
Wyclef jeans.
Whopper.
Whoppers.
Wine.
Yeah.
I was really struggling.
Now we need a 5th one. Like, we could have stopped the bed at 3, but then we went to 4, so now
now
we
you have
to
feel five.
Like, I feel like wagging.
Website?
Oh, website. Wagging. Like, you wag the players. Oh, that sounds really dirty, but it's not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yes. No, tell us about the show.
Okay, so it's going to be happening at the
Globe Pub on Irving Park.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be April 1st. We already talked about that. It's an evening event, and it's $20 to attend, and that gets you a ticket into the appetizer bar, and I think it gets you one drink as well, if I remember. I'm going to check my email.
No, there's a drink package
you can buy. That's a separate package.
Additional $10, $15?
Yep, we're checking it out right now, really. And instead of the $15, so it's the $15 option for the bar package.
Yeah.
And what does the bar package get you?
All you can drink for that
evening.
Evening.
Mm-hmm.
What?
And a protein bar.
And a protein
bar. A bar.
I mean, all you can drink, well, it's not the nice stuff, of course.
Well, I mean.
Yeah. I love PBR.
Who am I? Yeah, he asked me recently if we could
tap,
just like.
I think whatever's on tap is
included.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, though.
Yeah.
I'm not the fundraising manager.
You're
literally recorded right now.
Yeah.
Neighborhood bartender will know the answer to that question. As to what's included in the bar package.
Cool.
We're raising, it's a night of, there's a live auction and a silent auction.
A variety show.
A variety show. There's performers that we've worked with, like friends of our company members, and people who have come to see our shows that we've talked with afterwards, and they're
and
like,
and a couple
this
company members themselves.
And a couple company members themselves. And so there's variety of entertainment and a couple of auctions going on, and then obviously the drinks and the appetizers.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the live company members are there to mingle, and you can talk with us about what else we work on and what we do and where you can find us in the city.
And what are you guys raising funds for? Just like the general company kitty or?
Yeah, production costs.
Production costs. We're actually facilitating. So the company has been at Stage 773, like I mentioned, in the cabaret room for the past couple of years. And we're actually one of the big goals that we have is to start doing every show at Uptown Underground, mm-hmm. and moving into a different venue that, again, still has that cabaret-esque feel, but it's a change of pace. So that's one of the big things we're raising funds for, is our move into this beautiful Uptown Underground venue.
Yeah.
Which is just really gorgeous.
Theater space itself is usually the most expensive cost.
Yeah.
But then, of course, new equipment and whenever we need to update.
We're always upgrading our sound equipment.
That's absolutely
something that we're always working on.
That's something we're familiar with.
Well, yeah. So the last thing we do at every episode is pretty much is we do give like a minute plug, but that was pretty much close to it. Is there anything else that you guys want to, like give a shout out to?
We will have another show coming up in May.
Okay, cool.
May 14th, mm-hmm. Mother's Day evening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bring your mom.
Bring your mom.
Tell her how to listen to a podcast.
Yeah.
We got to figure that out.
I said, though my mom can't figure out the internet, she does like it live. She's seen it once live. Nice. All the way from North Carolina, and she really enjoyed it. So
mm-hmm. Nice.
Moms like it.
Yeah, they do.
Shout out Miss Baylog.
Yeah.
Is there any other, personal things that you guys love? Like, I know we were talking about Girl Scout cookies earlier.
Oh my God. Sometimes Girl Scout cookies. Support your Girl Scouts. That's important and happening. Can I give a shout out for something way later on in the year?
Yeah.
You all, lovely listeners, should come check out Oak Park Festival Theater's The Fair Maid of the West this summer. If you're intrigued by the stage combat talk that you've heard, I will be fighting and swashing buckles a storm.
Cool.
In that show. I'm part of the fight ensemble. It's going to be running in August.
The other day, I was like, when we went to Baha'i Temple the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I really want to go to Oak Park. That was like my third, like, oh, we could go Pratt Beach, Baha'i Temple, or Oak Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make a day of it.
Excellent. Yeah. Yeah. It's a beautiful outdoor venue. You can bring a picnic and watch a play.
Yeah. Cool. Where can people find you guys? Not literally. I can't find anybody, but I asked that.
Like, what's your address?
Twitter, Instagram.
This is my job.
Facebook page, maybe.
We have a website. It's shiny and new. We just updated it. It's at lockedintovacancy.com.
Cool.
We're also on Facebook. Like us. You'll get most of your events and updates from there. Mm-hmm. We are actively posting regularly.
Yeah.
But not too regularly.
Mm.
And then we're also on Twitter at @N2Vacancy. And that is also N2Vacancy for Instagram. So we're on all of the places.
Yeah.
Good.
Do you guys have personal pages for I don't know.
For like your projects, like if you do any outside art that you post or...
I do not, because I'm a member of so many different local theater companies in Chicago. I'm on all of their websites. Yeah. You can find my bio on the company page for Imagine Ensemble, which is a circus theater company in Chicago. You can find me on the To The Point website, which is a traveling theatrical stage combat troupe.
Cool.
And Locked Into Vacancy.
Yeah. I mean, if you're really into pictures of my cat, I'm on Instagram at Alisha B.A. A-L-Y-S-H-A-B-A. That's me. That's also my Twitter handle if you enjoy feminist rants and weird internet.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you've listened to the episode after yesterday's episode, you do enjoy feminist rants. Yeah. Like by default. So I guess check her out.
Yeah. Do it.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much for listening. My name is Dana Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
If you want to check out more of our work, you can head over to scopymag.com. You can find articles old and new. Keep an eye out. We actually are working on a new little project to reach out to some local arts journalists to get a few more new articles up.
Mm-hmm.
Posted about it on Craigslist. Very exciting. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at @ScopyMag. You can find us on Facebook under Scopy Magazine. You can find me on Instagram.
Yeah.
@SummertimeSweater.
And I'm @That'sAmore. Mm-hmm. Amore spelled A-M-A-U-R-E.
Yep.
Like my name.
Nailed it.
And it's also the name of one of our villains.
Yeah.
Really?
Nice. That's Amore. Amore. Uh-huh. Agent Amore. She fights the Rogers
sisters.
She's
Italian.
I'm not. But, but, hard segue, donations. we are hoping to expand our network And we can't do that without your help. We are hoping to host some live performances as well as get some extremely talented writers to create some content for us. But we want to pay our artists.
Yeah.
So you can head to scopymag.com, go to our About section. You can do a one-time donation or you can become a subscriber at a $5 or $25 a month level. Mm-hmm.
If you really want to be at 10 or like 12 and 75 cents or something like that, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. We'll find a way. Email us. we have been so blown away at the response that we've gotten already. You know, we're at a certain amount a month already. Not a lot, but enough that that we're humbled.
Yeah. Enough that it's like hope.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You can keep doing this.
Yeah. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.
Yeah.